is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Politics. Eita, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. My name is Fresh, and Butsang is in the building also. Today, we lay rest an incredible man, a stalwart and a half. If you talk struggle, you talk love of country, you talk country duty. You're talking about Ntate Thera Lekota. May his soul rest in peace as he's laid to rest today. Durko take on the U.S. ambassador with a démarché. What on earth is a démarché? Could it be marching orders, or the two are not related? SANDF are already in the south of Johannesburg in communities that said, we're under siege, we need the army to be brought in. In fact, earlier this week on the radio, I got an email from a teacher in the south of Jersey talking about the fact that we have a bit of peace since the army came here, and they've only been here for one day. But you also had a resident saying, I'm feeling harassed because they are in my flat. It's either you want law and order or you don't, unfortunately. You can't have your cake and eat it. We'll also look at the ad hoc committee, Koparlamenteng, and also have a look at what's happening in KwaMadlanga. Vincent Smith becomes the first real overalls moment from the Zondo fallout. And we'll look at a whole bunch of other things that we might not be mentioning in the intro, but they are just as important. The thing is, we want to jump straight in. So welcome. I am Butsang. I'm Fresh, he's Butsang, and you are welcome.
Yes, good morning, Fresh. Good morning to the followers and the viewers. Yeah, Eita.
Ntate Lekota left us at the age of 77. Struggle veteran, former defense minister, the first premier, the Free State, and founding COPE member. Let's talk about this category two, Agir.
Yes. And we spoke about the life of Ntate Lekota last week, but he's been laid to rest this weekend.
I got a text from one of his family members who just said thank you. They watched the episode and they wanted to thank us for paying tribute to Madala.
We have to know. Thanks to the family condolences. We had to. There was no way we could not talk about the contribution of Ntate Lekota. But I'm also thankful that actually he had to, in order to give the people in his home province, the Free State, where he became the first premier of the Free State post-1994, as well as he lived in Gauteng, you know, on his retirement in the founding of COPE, and when he was the minister, obviously, of defense under President Mbeki. So he had to be between Taba Tswane as well as Cape Town. So this past week, we saw on Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it was on Tuesday, there was a memorial service in the province of Gauteng in honor of Ntate Lekota. And on Thursday, it was at the Free State province, his home province, where we saw political parties. Particularly, my focus was on the African National Congress calling for unity between COPE and the ANC. Those calls came on a podium from Menom Vula Mokonyane, the first Deputy Secretary General of the ANC, but it's also a calling moment, despite the fact that Ntate Lekota the late had criticized almost everybody, including President Mbeki, that he loved so much, President Zuma, President Ramaphosa. Despite that, I see maturity, actually, and comradeship for them to decide that he must get a Category 2 state. He deserves it.
Yes.
But one would have thought he was not an ANC member. He had a fallout with the president as recent as last year, and therefore probably will be snapped. But thumbs up to our protocol, you know, chiefs. Thumbs up to the ANC for showing a maturity, and to President Ramaphosa's office for allocating that Lekota such a decent and well-deserved. If there's one politician that has come out of this country, an activist and a politician who have come out of this country, who, I've said it last week, Fresh, I've never seen a man being praised by almost all political parties, even the ones he ditched.
In fact, Mama Nomvula spoke about the fact that as much as he might have gone out there to start COPE, he's a comrade through and through. ANC.
Yes. But you know what ANC says to all those who left from the PAC time to UDM to COPE to EFF as well as to Umkhonto, which is a party now. They always say they want to welcome them back home into their party. And I think all political parties are struggling at the moment, Fresh. There's no winner, there's no top. Even the DA of the DA, for them to leave opposition benches to go and, you know, go into bed with ANC, it shows that political parties are struggling in South Africa, and they're all the same.
There was a statement about ANC COPE merger. What is that? What is that about?
Or reuniting.
Is it reuniting in mourning, or is it we are going to consume COPE and be one?
No. In mourning, they've been united since Tatedo Costa passed on. You know, yes. The last 2 weeks, they've been there. There's no doubt. They've been working together in preparing for the funeral. But that statement was informed by the words of Menno Mvula Mokonyane to say, in honor of Tatedo Costa, that loved the ANC so much and the ANC loved him, COPE must come back. Dissolve and come back to the ANC. For me, politically, I don't think it will be. I don't think COPE should allow, no matter how small the political party is, there is a political reason why Mbazima Shilowa and Musiwa Lukota left the ANC. And they mentioned principles. They mentioned how the ANC is no longer the party of the Luthulis and the SMS and what it was, you know, meant to be, disrespect of the constitution and the people. Now, My challenge with those calls, I'm for unity. I'm from liberation movement or so-called black political parties uniting. I am for that, to have a unified voice. But if you are going to use the departure of the founding leader of COPE as an opportunity to say, let's unite, you are creating an impression that Terra Musiwa Lekota was the problem. And now that the problem is gone, let's come back to, and that's not the case. Musiwa Lekota was not the problem to the ANC. He criticized the ANC while he was inside the ANC, while he was outside the ANC. And you cannot unite because of his departure, as if he was a stumbling block.
Sure. So is what you're saying then that as much as we might be united in mourning, can we not use this opportunity as a chance to say come back home?
Exactly.
Because if he wanted to be home, he would have come back home.
Exactly.
And if anything, if you want to honor the man in upholding what he stood for.
What he stood for, exactly. That's okay. What I'm saying.
All right. Can we get into politics?
Yes, rest in peace to Musiwa Terra Lekota.
Absolutely.
By the way, do you know why was he called Terra?
Was it not a soccer name?
Yes, the soccer name. Apparently was a dribbling wizard and a very good striker.
You know, I'm one hour in Elinta Tewapol.
Wapol, yeah. Yeah, now we can get into politics, bro.
So the Department of International Relations on Cooperation have demarched Leo Brent Bozil III, U.S. Ambassador.
Yes, sir.
Firstly, what on earth is a demarche?
Yeah, you know, I told you on radio during the week that if I knew how to make money, the people who were calling me journalists and saying, what is the meaning of demarche? When the news broke, luckily I was in front of the TV.
But what's the meaning of Google? Where was it Google?
Yeah, exactly. I was saying, no, but some guy said he Googled, but he wanted me to interpret it.
Okay, so clarity.
Yes, for
speak
clarity.
Speak to us like we're 5 years old.
In a language, yes. That, look, it's simply saying you have been ordered and summoned to the chief of protocol of the Republic, or the minister of international relations. Normally, it's to the chief of protocol.
Okay.
You recall when this ambassador arrived about a month ago, he handed his credential. He went to meet the acting chief of protocol of the Republic of South Africa, which is Mr. Clayson Munyela. The former spokesperson of the... Actually, I think he's still the spokesperson. He's just acting chief of protocol and international... and human resource at their corporate services. So you hand over the credentials. So whenever there's an engagement in terms of protocol processes between an ambassador or a consul general or a diplomat of one country, or even problems happening in your country, what normally happens is you are not even being called by the Minister of International Relations or the President. You are called in by the Chief of Protocol, because that's the point of entry. That's the point of departure. And there are other things that happens before. So to be demarched to DERCO or to the State Protocol Office, it's being summoned to come and explain yourself, to come and be warned. Sometimes it's just a warning to say, hey, ambassador or Mr. So-and-so of this country, kindly behave. But once the country goes to an extent of even saying, explain yourself, and behave and apologize. Those are the three elements that normally happen. They don't have to all happen. You can just be called to say, can you please resist in conducting yourself in this manner? Or if they call you the second time, they'll be like, but we have told you to resist before and you are continuing to do that. Well, it's more like in an employment field, one will call it a final warning.
Sure.
Before they send you packing, which if they send you packing, it means they're expelling you as they, and this is well defined in the Vienna Convention and you know, for diplomatic immunities and privileges.
Now, before Ambassador Bozzle III was even in the country, he'd already made it clear what his goal was when he gets here. Including getting South Africa to drop the ICC case against Israel,
the
genocide case,
amongst
a whole bunch of other things, and also that stop cozying up to the likes of Iran, or as he called them, enemies of America.
Enemies of America, yeah.
And unfortunately, some of these very enemies he speaks of are countries that do trade with America.
Exactly.
And him then having a five-point plan in terms of priorities for South Africa in his first public address is him being right on brand. Before he was even in the country, he told us what he wants.
Okay.
So why Makala, when he comes to the country and he says what he wants?
Well, fresh.
And even goes as far as having the audacity to pretty much give the Constitutional Court his middle finger.
You see, that was a problem, the last one. But yes, let me start with what you asked from the beginning. Me and you, we shouldn't be surprised because we warned people when he was announced last year in March by President Trump that this person is already a problem because of the utterances he has historically made about race and black people in general.
Yes.
The second part about South Africa in particular before he came here. The third part, it was also during that time, if you recall, when AfriForum Solidarity and at some stage the Democratic Alliance went to the USA, and he was at the forefront with the South African, the Tesla guy.
Musk.
Musk. They were in the forefront of pushing this thing about white genocide.
Yes.
And while he was still in the US, especially before and after he was announced as the preferred candidate to be President Trump's envoy to Tswane, he continued with that. We allowed it. Then he came to South Africa in February 2026, and hand over the credentials, and it didn't stop. One of the things that I don't know if our viewers are aware that only in the one month he has been in the country, he had already done the first mistake, and he was called to order, and he was not being demarched into DECO. So these utterances about the political slogan, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, and the insult and telling a busy news event in Hermanus in Stellenbosch that he doesn't care the word he used. He doesn't care what the Constitutional Court has decided. And for me, that was the camp. That was the last straw. And Minister Lamola could have not avoided that because you are actually an attack on our Constitutional Court, because the Constitutional Court makes decisions and judgments and or rulings based on the prescripts of the Constitution or the provisions of the Constitution. Now, once you attack a decision that was a high court decision and it was, you know, upheld by the Constitutional Court, it means you are attacking the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the very same Constitution that your country sent you here to come and respect as a sovereign state. And I think DECO was well within its rights to can summon Ambassador Boswell III to come and explain himself. But what I also liked about DECO or South Africa is that we showed, you know, normally we are on the fence, we are diplomats.
Yes.
But in this instance, from a diplomatic point of view, we demonstrated that we can actually have an iron fist and muscle up.
Yeah, act as and when you need to.
Act as when we need.
But still show restraint within that.
We demonstrated restraint.
And I think also make sure that you do things according to diplomatic expectations.
Exactly, so not that according to emotions.
So that no one can look back and say South Africa is being emotional.
Yeah.
Because I anticipate that this guy will not make it until the end of the year.
I also think he won't behave. I think the apology is just doing it. The damage is done.
But the fact that we believe that he's going to put his other foot in his mouth before the end of the year, at least the day he's expelled, Dirk can look back and say, here is the charge sheet. It's all for the record. So that no one can turn around and say, Dirko, we're acting emotionally or out of place.
Actually, yes, they can. Actually, fresh other countries, they would have expelled him for attacking the Constitutional Court, for saying the Constitutional Court, he doesn't care what it means. And the language used, you know, the language
and
used.
And that alone is worthy of an expulsion.
It's worthy of an expulsion. If it was a South African ambassador in the U.S. Look at Ambassador Rasool, who was in the U.S. It was on a platform, the same platform.
It was a webinar.
Yes, a webinar meeting. The same thing as this business platform that he was in. He said something that President Trump didn't like, and he was shown. He was not actually being told to leave only. He was also even declared persona non grata. You understand? So Americans would have done that. They have done it with our ambassador. And South Africa has demonstrated political as well as diplomatic maturity by saying, we have verbally warned you a few weeks ago. Now you have overstepped. You have come to a point whereby we can expel you from the country, but we are not going to do that. We are going to ask you to apologize and don't ever do that again. So we are in a position where if he commits another diplomatic error or crime of disrespecting the laws, the rules, and the political position, domestic position of this country, then we can expel him. Because you can't come and serve as an ambassador in this country, you know, on behalf of your head of state, and you disrespect the rules and the people of the country.
Could we argue that the fact that even at a Congress level in the U.S., they are watching Trump disregard a lot of issues that are unconstitutional and do as he pleases. So why would we expect him to come and respect our constitution when his president is not respecting their constitution?
And fresh, I hope and wish that the Americans with level heads are watching these developments. And with President Trump administration, he has clearly demonstrated, and I think Americans have been like that, just that Mr. Trump has put it out there.
Yes.
They've been disregarding and disrespecting one international laws to domestic laws of other countries, because they are in the forefront of regime changes.
Yes.
So it means you are disrespected. They are calling people terrorists, oppressors, non-democratic in their own countries. And they will say, you look at what they did with the president of Venezuela. Look what they did with Colonel Gaddafi. Look what they did with Saddam Hussein, now Iran. They will continue doing it everywhere. So they're disrespecting the sovereignty of a state. Secondly, they're disrespecting international laws. Like the United Nations, you know, charter, like the United Nations Security Council resolutions. They just disregard them. And when they go to the Security Council, they veto the decisions and the powers that are there. So that's why I always say the UN is a toothless dog. You know, before we came on set, there's a resolution that was taken on Thursday at the United Nations. United Nations issued a statement warning Iran to stop bombing the neighboring countries. The instruction was they must not even attack any of, because Iran has indicated that they are going to attack ports of entries or points that are actually will affect trade, because Israel and America said they are going to bomb their oil wells. And Iran says we will retaliate in a similar fashion.
Yes.
But because America is that far, we will bomb the oil wells, we'll bomb the ports of entries, will passages for trade with our neighboring countries that are being used as a springboard by the United States and Israel.
And surely, Butsang, I don't care what you think about me, but the minute you start assaulting me,
yes,
the person whose shoulder you are sitting on as you assault me
exactly
becomes part of the assault. And in my defending myself, I reserve the right to attack the very people who are assisting you assault me in the first place.
I don't think the Islamic Republic of Iran would have attacked the five neighboring countries if those neighboring countries did not house the military of the U.S.
Absolutely.
There are more U.S. military personnel in the Gulf region than any other place on earth. Mm. The USA is spending more on military in the Gulf region, and there's one threat for them, and they've mentioned it for the last, 37 or 47 since 1979.
Yes.
They've mentioned that actually their biggest enemy in the world is Iran. Mm. And now these neighbors, they go and they give the US military, and not only giving them military space to can practice or do what. Mm. Like we have in Botswana next door, we have the old, what do you call it, Air Force Training Academy and Landing Strip in Botswana.
I think Tebe Patswa.
Yes, Tebe Patswa, yes. It's not something like that. There, it's a military presence with armaments,
yes,
facing Iran. Now, that land that is occupied, or that space, whether it's ground space or airspace or IT space that is in any of the neighboring Gulf states, it is actually the space, if you look at what is the sovereign space, diplomatical, it's actually the space of the U.S.
Yes.
So those military barracks in Bahrain, in UAE, in Kuwait,
it's like an extension the United of your States.
It's
the embassy.
Extension of your embassy, yes. So I don't understand how can the United Nations come with a resolution that says Iran must stop bombing neighboring. They're not bombing generally neighboring. If in casualties of war, if it happens, It's collateral damage.
Wafa wafa.
Yeah, it's a collateral damage.
Yeah.
If I'm going to give a sniper a room in my house to kill my neighbor, and my neighbor retaliates and tried to kill the sniper and accidentally kills my dog or my kids, it's a collateral damage.
Mm.
Because why would I have given that sniper a room? And that's the case in Iran. I may be simplifying, but it's reality.
Mm.
Iran didn't start this war. Iran did not attack neither Israel nor the U.S.
Yes.
They were attacked.
Mm.
I mean, in one bombing, over 160 school girls were killed.
But even that one, I mean, Trump and J.D. Vance, more Trump, tried to make it about, no, it was friendly fire from Iran. Iran bombed their own people.
Yeah.
And then evidence was provided that it was a Tomahawk missile.
Yes.
That's an American issue missile.
Yes.
And then the response was, yeah, you see, we sell Tomahawks to a whole bunch of other people. But every investigation kept pointing back to the U.S.
To the U.S., yes. It's them, even if they sell it to a whole bunch of people, but it's them who sold those arms to those people.
Yes.
And why would you want to blame the victim? Because Iran is the victim.
Yes.
And says they are killing their own people. Even during some Iran investigations before this war, which is 14, 15 days old now, there were findings inside Iran that there were Mossad, which is Israel intelligence body, who were found infiltrating, influencing, arming Iranians to rebel against or revolt.
So they were stoking the fire.
They were stoking the fire so that they should come in and say, we are in here to come and defend your own people that you are busy killing. Well, it's them who does that. But, you know, for some of us who know politics and geopolitics, we know that America has been doing that all over. It's not a new thing that they will come and cause a fight in any other province of South Africa. And then when the government responds or retaliate, they will say, but South Africa is killing their own people, so let's go and bomb South Africa. That's how they stimulate their economy. And that's why at the moment, America is very worried. Because for the very first time, they've met a serious resistance that they never expected.
Yes.
And Iran became very smart with this. They went primarily for military bases, then they went for economic sectors.
Mm.
You understand? The airports, the harbors. Yesterday morning, they destroyed two oil tanks inside Iraq. That was Iran. And when asked, their foreign minister said, those oil tanks are actually part of funding the Israel and American military. And it's actually oil tanks inside Iran, but they belong to the American economy. So this is an economic war. And control of the Middle East. I think this war is going to last for a very long time. But thumbs up to South Africa. I just hope President Trump, with his five-point plan, the five-point plan you mentioned, It's not Boswell's plan, actually. It was Trump's instruction to say, go to South Africa. These are the things I want you to do.
So part of the plan is don't be friends with our enemies.
Yes, don't be friends with China and Iran and Brazil.
And
not
Russia.
Brazil and Russia, yes.
And I think one of them was also, can you do something about rural security?
Yes.
In essence, it's can you look after farmers
after
because
farmers.
They're murdered.
Yes.
But we've seen the statistics. Statistics don't lie.
Yeah.
Crime is affecting every single one of us. But if we are to protect anyone right now, it is black males
exactly.
who are bearing the brunt of the violence in this country.
In this country than any other person.
It's people in townships.
Yes.
And yes, also soft targets in rural areas and farming communities.
Exactly.
But if you're going to talk about prioritizing things or rejigging where you deploy people, then yes. you need to start where the most crime is happening.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, it's in urban areas.
It's in urban areas. It's in townships. It's in suburban areas.
Yes.
And they even added, then they talked about our relationship in BRICS.
Yes.
To say BRICS' plan is to de-dollarize that. So what's wrong?
So what's the problem with that?
What's the problem with that when you want to divorce the dollar and deal with the BRICS currency? And then the last one was that we must drop the IC International.
Oh, BEE. No, BEE policies.
And then there's a BEE process. So yes. those are the 5 points plan. When the president sends an ambassador, they will normally have priority areas between 3 and 5 to say, I'm deploying to that country and these are the priority areas. Mm-hmm. So he came with those priority areas. That's why he attacked South African constitution with kill the Boer, kill the farmer. I was actually looking at him explaining what a Boer is. And I'm like, he is so informed. He even can explain a Boer that is a white farmer and all those things. And then the constitutional court had said there's nothing wrong in singing slogans like kill the Boer, kill the farmer, one settler, one bullet during political rallies and engagements. That's an old decision of our own constitutional court. We cannot be told by a foreigner that we should commemorate and or celebrate our history that was very painful in a selective manner. They are not saying anything about South Africa still having the apartheid museum.
Yes.
They are not saying anything about streets and statues of Vervoort and polos in the middle of Tshwane still being hanging and overseeing us. They're not saying anything about it. They're not saying anything about President Ramaphosa and his predecessors still sitting at Unirebo Union Building, which became the Union Building because of the unification of the two colonial settler countries, reaching an agreement, and they called the Union Building because of the former Transvaal and with the Free State and then the Cape. They are not saying anything about it. So they want to force our country to preserve and protect, commemorate and celebrate white history, whether it was good or bad, it's immaterial. And apartheid legacy. While when we do our liberation movement, it's like telling us that, for example, the PAC must never commemorate the Langa massacre or the Sharpeville massacre.
But we can't act surprised when this dude, Ambassador Boswell III, is representing a government that does not understand why there needs to be a redress, even in their own country.
In their own country.
And the fact that they're actively even trying to erase black history, even within the military.
Mm.
So if that's the government he's coming from, why would he think he'd care about black history, the plight of black people, redressing the ills of the past? And yes, BEE is not perfect. Yes, BEE has been abused by people with big names, fronting for people with big pockets. But it's not to say we should stop trying to fix the wrongs of the past. But the fact that he doesn't see that, now says to me, he doesn't see us.
Yeah, he Haribon. Doesn't. Look, Fresh. For example, you mentioned correctly that BEE may have benefited a few hundred of black people, but that's our internal problem.
Yes.
We will deal with it.
It can be dealt with.
And issues like the Matlanga Commission, the committees, the Zondos, it's part of our attempts as a country to address those challenges.
Yeah, but allow us to work
allow
on ourselves.
Allow us to work on our own issues. And BEE is not excluding white people.
Exactly.
It is actually saying, let us help this child who didn't start the race from the same position
yes.
to come and catch up with the other one.
And those same policies are probably benefiting Caucasian women more than pre-94.
Actually, I wish somebody in the diplomatic circles of South Africa could tell this Boswell guy that, do you know that white Afrikaners, specifically women, who were oppressed during apartheid by their own husbands, brothers, and white males, feel free now and have equal opportunities with their white male counterparts, which they never did before.
Yeah, the patriarchy of the time did not allow for
that. Yes, you understand? And this same BEE charter that is attacking, part of it, it accommodated women. It didn't say black women.
Yes.
Understand? Women, there was patriarchy. It addressed some of those things in deploying women in South Africa. How many women white judges did you have in South Africa? Legal judges did you have in South Africa before 1994? Probably one or two.
Yeah.
And it is because of this charter and this constitution that we have, which we have a problem with and we are addressing it, that even white previously disadvantaged people are benefiting from this process. But you know what? Thumbs up to Derko. Thumbs up to Minister Lamola and President Ramaphosa for staying quiet, put. And the Economic Freedom Fighters, correctly so, as the opposition, has actually called for the Portfolio Committee in Parliament on International Relations to sit and come and explain why this man is still in the country. So the EFF has adopted.
I'm with the EFF on that one.
And actually, both the opposition, the EFF and Umkhonto we Sizwe, they've adopted a very strong position to say, why is he still here?
Sure.
After the attack on the constitution, they want the Portfolio Committee to ask Lamola and Derko, why did you still actually demarch him and not expel him?
And I think we also need to address the elephant in the room. This need by some people in the white community who believe black people must be babysat.
Yeah.
And that black people can't be trusted with anything.
Exactly.
And that unless we approve of it or unless we vetted you ourselves, we need to keep a hawk's eye on you. You're in Africa.
Yes.
Africa ya rona. Right? Can you allow us re-tabbing and fix where we need to fix? Where we feel, yes, we will fix it.
Yeah.
But we don't need you to come and be a prefect and try and say, yeah, but do it like, no. You guys handle your own business yourselves. Can we do the same?
They can't even handle their own business in the United States at the moment. The world is in chaos. There's a war going on. It's because of the United States. They have a president who defied their constitution.
Yes.
Who defied the court orders and decided to then ignore Congress.
Yeah.
And the only hope they are left with is that he loses the midterm election in November. That's the only hope. But President Trump is not towing the line of their own cause. At least we have a president in this country, whether we like him or not, whether he's doing good or not, who at least respects the constitution of this country and the people of this country. Let them leave us. Let them leave us to do what we want to do with our own country.
Exactly.
And white people in South Africa who are not happy with the status quo in South Africa, they have a choice to can effect a change, work with anybody else to bring change, or do the easy one. Australia is open and the US is open. They can ask Boswell to be a co-pilot in there. When the next round of 49 white farmers go, I think he must go with them.
No, but apparently they're coming back.
I don't take that process seriously.
Can we talk about that? That there's a plane load of people that left the country as refugees.
Yes. Because, it's not even a year.
Because they were being persecuted.
Yes.
Now we're told that they're coming back.
Yeah.
And that people who are saying, surely if someone leaves the country premised of a lie, that is actually even borderline a treasonous lie, depending on who's telling it. Should they be allowed back into the country?
Well, as a constitutional democracy, we don't have a choice. But normally, I would never accept a person who does that in my house.
Yes.
But because we have a constitutional democracy, they will be allowed. And also because of the Concord, you remember the recent constitutional court ruling of dual citizenship, if you have forfeited it before. And I think that's, I don't say it's politically correct, but I'm saying what the law says.
Under what circumstances can your citizenship be stripped from you?
Oh, treason is one of them.
And surely it's treasonous to leave your country seeking asylum premised off a lie.
A lie
that sullies the name of the country.
Yes. And also it is to the discretion of the Minister of Home Affairs, based on what you have done or what has happened. But the other thing also, it's, you know, when you start being a foreign spy or an agent, if I put an agent of a foreign government. And these people, I can classify them as agents of the USA.
I was going to say, how do we know that all this time they were not undergoing training? Yes. Now they're going to be here and be...
In the communities, yeah. How do we know? That's a very big possibility to that.
So can we double vet them on the way back?
They will definitely be vetted on the way back. They're not just going to come into the country.
So now we're going to have sleepers here.
By the way, that's what the USA did in Afghanistan.
Yes.
They didn't send spies or agents from the US only.
Yes.
The majority of their agents,
yes.
And military agents, were Afghans.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how they operate.
And it's the same Afghans that when the stuff hit the fan and they had to evacuate and go to the US, they're now being victimized by Trump, who said, we did not know.
And some of them ended up in South Africa. 25 of them came here crying without a place to live.
Yeah, guys. Are we done?
Yeah, we are done, fresh. Boswell, behave or else you are out.
I don't think he'll last the year. I'm going to put $1,000 on the line and say I don't think he'll last the year. In fact, $1,000 even, not rent.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll last a year.
No, I don't think he's going to last.
The mouth, unfortunately, is a very wet, slippery place, and tongues will do that, and feet will slip into mouths.
But again, if he misbehaves, that's where we will remind the world that South Africans, no matter the challenges, we can rise to the occasion.
Yes.
Whether it's in sports, whether it's in politics, whether it's in diplomacy or what, we showed during apartheid, even when the apartheid regime was sponsored by the US, by the British, we stood against them and we became victorious at the end. We crumbled apartheid without the help of Britain and the US.
Absolutely.
We did.
Absolutely.
The superpowers were behind the apartheid regime. But we stood fast in all, by all means necessary, in all fronts, whether it was cultural, then, consumer, military, we stood firm.
And then you want to complain and say, but why are you friends with Cuba and Russia? Cuba and Russia were there when you were not.
Well, exactly.
You were not there. Cuba and Russia were there.
I always make example to say all the British companies, all the American companies, the Ford, the Coca-Colas, the BPs, they were in South Africa operating normally, funding, arming the South African government.
Holumunati.
When countries like the Scandinavian countries, the Swiss, you understand, the Russians and many other countries sacrificed, you know how I always make an example with the Swedish Volvo. How Volvo suffered. Volvo used to be big in South Africa in the 60s and 70s. And when, after 1994, or before 1994, Volvo decided, I'm not going to stay in that country, including Saab of Sweden.
Of Sweden,
you know,
yes.
They left. Which, and Saab is one of the biggest military producers and suppliers in the world.
Yes.
They could have easily armed the apartheid government to finish us. They took a principled decision. As I can say, we are leaving that country. What happened to Saab and Volvo when they came back to South Africa? They couldn't go
They struggled.
You understand? And who makes Pepsi Cola? Is it the Americans or is it Korean Pepsi? I don't know where does it come from.
I don't know if it's a Pepsi Cola. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Did you see how Pepsi struggled to come back? Pepsi sacrificed. They left South Africa in 1978-79. They tried to come back after 1995. Until today, Pepsi is still struggling because Coca-Cola went to buy the British company in South Africa. People don't know Spalletta was originally British, while Coca-Cola was American. They merged. That's why they took Stoney and all other drinks. And people may say, what is Botswana talking about? These are cool drinks, man. Pineapple, what? That
the
was
groovy.
Part, the groovy.
Because it before the Spalletta, it was actually groovy.
It was groovy, yes.
So the name, the generic name for a cool drink, groovy.
The groovy, yeah.
But it actually comes from the brand name Groovy.
Yes.
So Groovy came as a ginger beer,
as
a Spalletta, and as I think as a pine drink.
There was a pine drink, yes.
Yeah, which later became Spalletta.
Yes.
Now you know where the name Groovy comes from. If your mother or your grandmother asked for Groovy. Before Spalletta, that was Groovy.
You come to hashtag politics to learn why guys Groovy come from.
That's the politics.
But these were politics. These were economic battles. And fresh, you know, in wrapping up this, I think me and you, because of our internationalism and passion with diplomacy, we can talk about this one topic forever. But it's South Africa standing up. We have to rise as a nation. And again, I'm one of the people who say, I wish he was chucked out. But I think Derko did very well to take this step and stop here.
Yes.
We are building a case.
Let's talk about the South African National Defense Force. They've been deployed into certain communities in Johannesburg,
yes,
including
sir.
Rivoli. And in fact, we got an email on the radio show on Thursday.
On Thursday, yes.
From a Rivoli teacher who says that we had peace. Mm. Where this thing has been out of control. Not even the police could deal with the gangsterism and the drugs on the street. And today is a day of peace for all of us in Rivoli. So thank you, SNDF.
Yes.
But there was also a clip of a guy, I think it was in the evening news on Wednesday, saying that they were busy searching his flat and he felt like he was being harassed,
harassed,
or being victimized.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a case of you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. We complain when there's no law enforcement, when there's no police presence.
And there's no security.
Now that they're there, you're the first one to say, yeah, but don't search me.
But Fresh... Oh. A person, when we are in a society or a community that is infested with drugs and murder, because for me it's not only drugs, it's murder.
Yes.
And some of these murders, history, stats, research, police report have indicated that this violence that is happening in the Cape Flats, in the townships like Soshanguve and Mabopane, in Rivoli and in El Dorado Park, it is mainly influenced by one, social ills, unemployment, one, two, abuse of alcohol and drugs. You understand? So we cannot, if we are having that problem as a society, and the government is taking a hardline step, because when they try to use it with community forums, like people who are caring in that community, they get killed by the drug pushers. Either the owners of the drugs or the users, or the owners use the users of drugs to kill and terrorize people in a society in order for their business to thrive. And then they start bribing and working with corrupt police people, or even killing police. Now the government comes with an intervention that many of us, and me and you, or this platform has been one of the platforms that has been saying, President Ramaphosa, bring the soldiers to help the police, not to police the nation or the people, to give support to the police. Because, I mean, in the Cape Flats, for example, one weekend, 8 people die. Another weekend, 12 people die because of gangs, drug gangs and drug-related gangs. The president has informed the nation at the State of the Nation address. People clapped hands. He instructed the police commissioner and the SNDF generals to go and devise a plan. They gave them a mandate. They came with a plan. The plan is being implemented, or it was tested this week, and now what people want to cry. Why would other people want to cry? I'm saying if the soldiers come to search my car or my house because they are doing a routine search or they suspect, and they come with soldiers to come and search, why would I complain if I'm not a criminal?
If you have nothing to hide, then just cooperate, let them do their work, and they will move when they're done.
And they'll go to the next
As long as
house.
They're not ransacking and breaking stuff. You see, if they're ransacking and breaking stuff and there's an indignity in how
an
they do this,
intimidation,
it's a different story.
It's a different story, yes. And we won't allow that as the people. We will critique the soldiers and the police if they do that. But if they're doing it as a routine, it's like when you drive and there's a roadblock and they say, this car passed, and they say, you come. You can't say, but why did you let those ones pass?
Or treat it like it's an inconvenience.
No, it's not. Inconvenience is when a stray bullet, because of the two guns, come and hit your child who's playing in the garden.
Yes.
That is inconvenience of life. Inconvenience is when your kids cannot go to school or you can't go to work because there's gunshots every night and every evening in the society. When a person like that teacher from Rivoli writes to us on 938 Radio Fresh, and even the comments, not only that email, even comments that came with WhatsApps and all, and people were saying, it's scary to see men in boots and rifles on our streets, but we sleep peacefully.
Yes.
There was one voice note from a lady who says, it's 8 o'clock at night and the kids are still playing outside without fear because we feel safe.
Yes.
For me, that's what matters.
Mm.
And I think also it was unfortunate that during the course of this week, the Democratic Alliance leader, who is the chairperson of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Police, has summoned South African National Defence Force and the Minister of Police and the Commissioner of Police to come and explain.
Was this Ian Cameron?
Yes, Ian Cameron. Yes. To come and explain the modus operandi, the budget, how are they going to do this thing. Where was Ian Cameron when these people devised an operational plan that the president had ordered them to do? And then he questions that the president did not get parliamentary approval. But I want to simply say, this is not a normal deployment of the soldiers to do the police work. It is the deployment of the soldiers to back up the police so that the police can do their work. That's how it's defined. And I have referred many people to say, President Ramaphosa used, you know, a section 201, subsection 2 of the Constitution of the country to say, if you read paragraph A to C of subsection 2 of section 201 of the Constitution, there are four elements that are being defined and or described there where the head of state can deploy the army as the commander-in-chief inside the country for domestic purpose. And it's very clearly defined. And I think President Ramaphosa used that. I don't think the DA wants to embark on a route, really, when we are fighting horrific crimes of murder. Yes. They want to embark on a legislative and or judicial route to question if President Ramaphosa acted properly.
Especially if you are members of the same government of national unity.
Have
a meeting. You know, why can't your leader and...
Why can't the leader and Ramza go and dance and have a drink and talk? Did you arrive there?
Exactly.
They are the leaders of the GNU. They are number one and number two.
Comrade, these are my concerns here. Can we discuss it?
Exactly. I mean, he is the chairperson of a portfolio committee on security or police. I think it's so easy for him to can call Minister Kashalia as the minister or his other counterpart and say, let's meet and talk and discuss this thing while the lives are being saved out there.
Mm.
And for me, that's what matters.
One issue that a lot of us don't discuss, I suppose, because it becomes an oversight in our passionate plea for justice and cleaning up of our streets, is something that was lamented by an NGO, if I'm not mistaken, or a community member, who spoke about the fact that it's all good, let's clean up.
Yes.
It's all good, let's shut down the lollipop lounges and where these kids are doing drugs. But can we also have social workers on standby? Because as much as you are arresting drug dealers, you're pushing them out of the community, you're shutting down the drug dens and the lollipop lounges, you're now forcing people who might be addicted to a level that needs intervention to go cold turkey. That is also a time bomb that you don't want to have on your hands. Because now you've got people who've gone cold turkey in the communities.
Yes.
And all they want is a fix.
Yeah, but people are going to ask, what is French talking about? What is cold turkey? French?
Cold turkey is, I do drugs every single day, and then tomorrow there's zero drugs.
Yes.
That in itself is dangerous for you.
Very dangerous.
So I think it's important to make sure that within those communities, we also make sure that there are social workers and people who can assist people who might be that addicted, that they need an intervention.
It's the same as any other addiction.
Yes.
I'm a black coffee addict. Very strong black coffee.
I also love black coffee. He's a great DJ. He turned 50 on Wednesday. So happy birthday, black coffee.
Oh, was
carry
it
on.
His birthday?
Yeah, black coffee turned 50 on Wednesday, yes.
Oh, he's old. I thought he came fun.
No, black coffee is 50.
Oh, congratulations. But fresh.
Ready cohort.
I was talking about coffee that I drink that I didn't get today because Kelly is not here. I'm talking about coffee that I drink. You know, scientists have said if you are an addict of coffee like Botsang, you can't just wake up and drop it. You must slowly push it out, reduce the quantities. If you are drinking it every day, make it every other day. You know the birth of the South African or the Tswane famous drug called Nyaope?
Yes.
What caused that?
Mm.
When the police in Pretoria, especially Pretoria North, Soshanguve and Mabopane yesterday, they fought the battle against people who were distributing drugs in those areas and pushed them out. The people that you talk about to say they went into cold turkey.
Yes.
So what these youngsters did, then they decided to find a solution. They became scientists and they developed a drug called Nyaope.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people don't know that Nyaope was invented actually in Mabopane, Pretoria, South Africa.
Yes.
So they went, they became creative to mix battery cell with this and that, and they created this concoction called Nyaope. And it is because when the drug sellers, they were pushed out, exactly what you are seeing with this NGO.
People became desperate.
Social services, health, people became desperate and they went for desperate measures. So what you need to do when you cancel a person, you have to bring all role players into place. So the country is going to need social work services, health services in the communities where the police and the soldiers are going to successfully drive drug dealers out. Because then we don't want to end up with cold turkeys, as you say.
Yes. Yeah. Or people who are so desperate, they might do anything that includes maybe committing even more crime.
Yes. They'll commit other crimes and move to other areas. So it's a call for us to Minister Motsoaledi, to Minister of Social Development, to community leaders and organizations to say, let's take care of those
multi-pronged
children.
Approach.
Yes, a multi-pronged approach. I think that we need to do that as a nation.
Absolutely. Yes. Let's talk about the ad hoc committee and Madlanga commissions and where they are so far this week.
Well, we saw end of last week the wrapping up of Paul O'Sullivan and Ms. Smith at the ad hoc committee. And this week, and they had mostly the police at the ad hoc committee, the police general that was alleged to have received money to do a BBL.
Is she the one who stood up and she turned around?
You know, Fresh, I want to talk about that. I'm very disturbed and I'm actually very angry. I've always said the ad hoc committee of this country, it has more structural and legal powers than the Commission of Inquiry. Because the ad hoc committee, it's a committee of parliament, actually three committees of parliament that came together because of this crisis in the judicial system. Now, you find 10 or 12 men and women who are lawmakers, MPs, spending 4 hours discussing the artificial bumps of a lady to an extent of them even asking her to rise in parliament and turn around and show the whole, not nation, the world, how her artificial bumps look alike because they are a center of discussion. How did we arrive at that?
But it's evidence.
No. Fresh. No. I disagree. That's what's the evidence? The next thing you're going to say, she must take off her pants.
But that's the smoking bomb. Sorry, the smoking gun. The BBL is a smoking gun. So we must present the gun.
Why did we have to be tormented and put through looking at that woman giggling, a whole police general giggling and showing off her bums, picking up her jacket up, turning around, and all those MP men who actually, I think in my position, there was an element of disrespect, you know, with the exception of Saul, it's from Patriotic Alliance, who said because he's a Christian, he's a man with many holes, he had to look somewhere when that woman started demonstrating her bumps in parliament. He said, it's the only one. Everybody was laughing. And actually, the Action SA leader, James, and Miss Kusela, Di Kosangweni now, they were those two ladies stood up and said, but guys, is this necessary that we ask this lady to demonstrate her bumps? Guys, we're in parliament.
Because it's of no consequence whether or not you saw the evidence.
Yeah, what difference will it make to so? Now we saw her bumps are extended and she considered that, but she said she paid for her bumps.
But was it a good BBL at least?
Not in my view. Okay. I think she must go and claim her money back. Not in my view, but okay. I'm not there to judge. I was irritated actually.
I was asking for a friend.
Okay, yeah. Mm. No, you should have not asked me. That's a parliament. That's a law-making body. Those bunch of people who were laughing there. I was even disappointed from Julius Malema to Mkhonto, where he's a leader, saying at the end of their waste of time, they even as she walked out, they're like, can she walk first so that we can see her back? What nonsense is that?
Inappropriate.
It's inappropriate. Mm. And I like and I respect Soviet Lekhanyane from the ANC who's chairing that ad hoc committee. I like him and I respect him a lot. I think he's one of the seasoned politicians. But he played along as well until very late. I think during break, somebody must have sent him a WhatsApp or something. But he woke up later. He said, Jekora Munyana, it's inappropriate what you are doing. It was very embarrassing. And I think they should be condemned for doing that. You understand? Sure. Look, there's nothing wrong with bums. We all like bums. We all like women who are good looking. But that's an official parliamentary process where we are looking at acts of corruption. All they needed to do was to prove that woman's BBL that was done in Brazil was paid for by an alleged criminal named Mr. Matlala or not. And she brought invoices and proved that it was not. They should have stopped there.
Yes.
Or said, we don't trust the evidence you have brought. We've got a different evidence. You are probing. Yes. You know, and then we move to Madlanga Commission quickly. I've said this before, and people think I am on the side of criminals. You know how much I despise corruption and criminal people. But I always say, if you are not yet judged, prosecuted, and sentenced for a criminal activity, you are not a criminal.
You're guilty of nothing.
You are guilty of nothing.
It's an allegation. It yes. must still be tested.
Yes.
But, and I think I know where you're going with this, that depending on the stature of the witness, some are treated with more respect than others.
And I've observed it on both the committee and the commission.
Yes.
Particularly in the Madlanga Commission. I hold no barrels for Justice Madlanga and the true legal eagles. I actually respect them. However, I have observed with a political and a human eye how they treat their witnesses indifferently. You understand? When is the Brown Mokgotsis who can speak English very well, who are not educated, when it's the Ekuruleni suspended deputy chief, Julius Mkhwanazi, and people they perceive to have committed acts of corruption, yet not sentenced. When it's them, there is a conduct and a behavior that I have observed to say they don't treat them the way they would have treated a Mr. Robert McBride, a Mr. Senzo Mchunu, a Mr. Becky Cele, and anybody else who come there. Some are being smiled at, they are being treated with some little bit of level of dignity and respect. I don't know whether it's because they wear suits or because they are not, you know, their crimes are of minority. So they are being treated with respect.
What happened with Karim's lawyer?
What happened? You know, I watched that over and over. The evidence leader, Mr. Chakasin and the others, they introduced a document or some evidence that Mr. Karim's lawyer, I just forgot his name, had said they did not have access to that timeously, and therefore they will need time.
So it's just been presented?
Yes, or they got it late. It was not part of the initial package, okay? Now, where it started, it's when the commissioners, as well as the evidence leader, considered to say, yes, they deserve more time to can look at whatever they say they want to process and engage and consult. It started there. There was a consensus that they need time. Then senior counsel Chakasin said he thinks 45 minutes it will be enough
to peruse the thing.
Peruse that document.
Yes.
Now that's where I came in. Actually, when he said that, the first question was like, but how do you determine?
Yes.
As my opponent.
Yes.
That I need 45 minutes to peruse what I have not had cleansed you.
Absolutely.
How do you determine? It was not for him to call out that. But Justice Madlanga intervened fairly when Karim's lawyer protested to say...
Rafiq Bana.
Rafiq. Can I just call him Rafiq? When Rafiq said, but who are you to can determine? He also used a little bit vulgar language like, oh, your mouth is not my mouth. Something along those lines. You can determine that I need 45 minutes. It's not. Then Justice Madlanga, fair and square, intervened and said, what if we give you 2 hours? Do you still think, as the commission, we are granting you 2 hours to go and through that? And he wanted a postponement. Remember, a day before, they had just been judged against, or that morning, to say they can't postpone anymore. There's wasters of time. They can't change their timetable. And Justice Madlanga said, what if 2 hours? What will be appropriate with you? And he gave reasons. As Justice Madlanga was giving reasons, he said something that in law it's called a statement in passing. It's not factual. You are saying something in passing.
Okay.
And Rafiq took it personally. He said to me, but when you say such a thing, Justice Madlanga or Chair, it looks like you are already prejudging what you are going to say when we come back.
Yes.
And the argument started there. And Justice Madlanga said, no, but I did not say that. You are a senior counsel. You should have known that sometimes judges can be rough at you in court. They can be hostile, but they can still come with a judgment to your favor. That's not what I said. And the gentleman, Rafiq, said, this is what is interesting for me. He said, he was very calm. He said to Justice Madlanga, Che, that's what I heard. You may have not said that, but that's what I heard. And Madlanga became irritated, and I could see with the body language. I've never seen him like that. Justice Madlanga said, but I did not say that. And he said, but that's what I heard. Now that's where my argument comes in as an observer. I heard something. I may be wrong. You are emphasizing you didn't say that. And he said, I may be wrong. And Madlanga said, yeah, we have the tapes. We can play the recording. Hear who's introducing the tapes.
Yes.
It's Justice Madlanga who said, we have the tape. We can play the recording during break. You can listen to them.
Mm.
And he said, if that's the case, and he gave an explanation of what he said. Justice Madlanga gave a clear explanation of what he said. And the gentleman, Rafiq, said, if that's the case, then I heard you wrong. I withdraw. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, you were wrong. And where it became worse, it's when he said, are you going to apologize for, or you are just withdrawing? He said, no, I'm not apologizing. But if you insist, I will apologize. And said, apologize now. He said, I apologize, subject to hearing the tapes. Yes.
So I withdraw,
yes.
But let me hear the tape.
Yes.
And if I am wrong, I will apologize.
Yes.
But Madlanga would not have that.
He fumed. He said, why do you want to conditionally?
Yeah.
You are giving a conditional
apology. I want to fully satisfy myself before I apologize about what I'm apologizing for.
Wrong or right, yes. Rafiq was calm.
Yes.
And to say, commissioner or judge or chair, can I go and listen to the tape? If you are right and I'm wrong, I'll come and apologize. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that.
Because he's withdrawn it.
He's withdrawn it. But Justice Madlanga, in my view and opinion, he failed to restrain himself. He was very irritated. He went to an extent of even saying, you are not only wrong, I can even say it raw or something like that. You are lying. And you know, judges and courts don't allow us to use the word lying. Understand? You are not telling the truth. So he became very heated there. But I saw the nation divided and 90-10, I was part of the 10, to say, no, that lawyer is arrogant. It's not fresh. Mm-hmm. You are there to defend your client. You will use anything under the sun to defend your client. And I wonder the day Paul O'Sullivan goes to Madlanga Commission, I want to see how he's going to behave himself, being a white racist person in front of a full bench of commissioners who are black. I want to see if Paul O'Sullivan will conduct himself in front of the Madlanga Commission the way he conducted himself in front of a parliament.
Yes.
And how is Justice Madlanga going to react to that?
Mm.
But I think, look, these people are getting tired. More and more information is coming out. More and more shocking information is coming out. Because this irritation and this, what caused the debate and the argument mainly, it's when Senior Counsel Chuckleson in the Madlanga Commission was probing Karim regarding his financial transaction with Mr. Maumela.
Mm.
You understand? It came at that time because for me it looked like Karim is throwing Maumela under the bus and he has started singing. And people wanted to disrupt that. That is my observation. They didn't want to disrupt that. And then I asked a question. Who is actually behind this whole thing, Fresh? And I'm saying it to you and to the viewers. One day, we are going to wake up and hear that this whole capture and corruption in the police, the judiciary, the justice system, and all that, there's bigger names up there. It is not the Cat Matalas of this. It is not only the alleged Karims and Moma. There's bigger fishes.
Yes.
I can tell you already, this thing is bigger than we thought. We're talking billions exchanging hands illegally. Police, ministers, generals, business people, politicians, everybody. And then you can see where the tension comes from. Imagine if one of these witnesses can wake up one day and say, I gave money from there to Justice so-and-so. Imagine if we can arrive there. And I see that coming. Wait until Cat Matlala sits on that chair. And I hope they don't do anything to Vusimusi Cat Matlala before he comes and testifies and tell us as a nation what is going on here. Because in Botswana's opinion, a lot is going on. This is not just a simple crime. Mark my words, you will remember this day.
We are running out of time.
Yes, sir.
In closing,
yes.
Vincent Smith.
Yes.
Who is he and why is it a big deal that he reached a plea bargain and he's going to jail? What has Vincent Smith done?
Mr. Vincent Smith, one, is an ANC senior politician.
Okay.
He was a chairperson.
Baba Mukuba, was he not expelled?
No. I don't remember Baba Mukuba. I don't. He was a chairperson of one of the parliamentary portfolio committees.
Yes.
He was removed from that position. I don't know if he's fired, expelled from the ANC, but he was removed from that position when allegations sufficed with more material evidence that he actually lied under oath. He was one of the people who were entrusted with a committee that oversaw anti-corruption and, you know, police and all those things in the country. And while he was chairing that committee, it was also immediately just after the Zondo Commission. However, he was mentioned during the Zondo Commission as one of the people who have benefited from Bosasa. The security company that provided security to the prison services. Him, Menomvula Mokonyane, as well as Ntate Gwede Mantashe, the chairperson of the ANC, they are some of the people, the Lucky Montanas of this world, and many others who were mentioned that in the Zondo Commission that they may have unfairly, unduly, and illegally benefited from Bosasa in their contracts. Okay. Now, when he was approached with this, he denied and all that. So material evidence came up that it was not actually only what was alleged. There was many other things that he benefited from. School fees of kids being paid, cars being bought, money being received.
Do you think that's why there was a deal that was cut? Because if it goes to court, chances are you're going down for longer.
Yes, yes. I think the crimes he had committed, the lying under oath, it was going to land him up in jail for various crimes committed at different times, not only receiving the money. Lying under oath was going to be a separate thing. And I think he was going to spend a longer time in jail. And also when you go to court and you challenge the state will dig more.
Yes.
They'll find more of the things. And I think what happened is his lawyers sat down and looked at the papers and the material evidence that the court has or the state has, the hawks. You know the advantage to criminals or alleged criminals, the advantage to them, those who are accused, is that the law requires the accuser to provide information to you in order to prepare a defense. They can't bulldoze you in court. They can't just understand. So it gives, and when you realize that you are being in a tight corner, they can ambush you in a court of law. When people realize that they are in a tight corner, what they do is then the law inside the Criminal Justice Act, what in the country, makes provision that alleged criminals can go and plead with the state, like the late President Robert Mugabe's son is doing at the moment. When you realize that there's enough evidence on the state for me to go to jail, you go and plead with the state.
Yes.
Part of pleading is that you must tell the truth, everything but the truth, and put everything on record.
Does that include snitching even?
That it mainly includes snitching.
Okay.
Mainly. To can snitch. Let's say you're on your own, you're going to get 15 years to jail because he was faced with 15 years to jail. But he can snitch 7-8 more people and the state can even recover assets from those people. The state will weigh the option to say, here we have a chief witness, a key witness, who can assist us to go and arrest 8 more people and recover stolen assets from the state. Understand? So I think that's what they do, snitching, but also asset recovery. First offense, you have never been jailed, you have never been charged before. Yeah.
Do you think Vincent Smith is going to drop some big names at any stage?
I don't think he's going to drop big names. You see, the other thing that he may do, because these things happened before the formation of Umkhonto we Sizwe, some of the people may have moved from the ANC to Umkhonto we Sizwe. He may snitch those people because they're in the opposition. But he won't mention the names. He may give the SIU or the Hawks a lead to the big names. I don't think he's going to stand up in court and mention names. And he's going to fear for his life.
Yes.
And he's going to prison. Actually, he's already in prison physically. So I think he's going to give the state some leads to some big names. That's what he's going to do. Especially that I think he feels his organization, the ANC, failed to protect him politically or to use political power when he was faced with this lawsuit. So he's going to he will have to give something. The stage does not reach a plea bargaining very easily. A man who was faced with more than 15 years to prison, he went for a plea to say, guys, give me 7, I'll snitch, I'll talk, I'll give you whatever you want. And we know that over the 7 years, he's going to be in prison physically for 2 years and 4 months, 2 years and 6 months maximum. So I would rather, instead of risking to go to prison for 15 plus years, I would rather go for less than 3 years. And it's all about plea bargaining. It's all about compromising, snitching, and talking yourself out of a situation. I don't like that law, by the way. Yes. I don't like the plea bargaining advantage that the law provides to people. I think it's an unjust law for people who are innocent, people who are not committing crime. Now, somebody commits crime knowing that I can go and negotiate with the state to say, even so-and-so committed crime and I can help you catch so-and-so. I don't think it's a fair. When you commit crime, you must actually serve your time.
Do you think anyone is going to possibly come forward and say, listen here, I don't want to have you come after me, so I'm going to come to you and say, can we discuss this thing?
I see many doing that. You see now that the government is already acting on the Zondo recommendations.
Yes.
And then there's four commissions happening. I see many people coming out. Remember, these people also, they are in their old ages. They are in their 60s and 70s. I see them coming out. I don't know why are they waiting. And they can't play Msholozi game anymore. It's only President Zuma who managed to get the case running for 20 years in South Africa. The state is not going to allow that anymore.
Yes.
We have seen that the loopholes in the law, what they can do. Because President Zuma didn't refuse to go to court.
Sure.
He just lost the loopholes in the system to delay to go to court.
Know the system, use the system.
Who will know the system better than the head of state? But President Ramaphosa is doing it as well, Fresh. He's doing the same.
The EFF were picketing outside the Concord because they want Palapala reports.
Yes.
What's happening there? Because they say they'll be there every month.
Yeah, they said so, but we know how EFF will promise. But, oh no, it's not yet a month because it was the beginning of last week. Yeah, it's almost 5 weeks now. But the Chief Justice Meyer had promised them that the report will come out soon. Look, it's been 2 years since the Palapala report. It's almost 2 years, and I don't see why, if the Constitutional Court said and went through this, why are they holding it back? But again, it demonstrates that there's no independence in the judicial system and the executive system and the legislative system. There's no independence. We're having Minister Mkhunu, we're having commissions, and Minister Mkhunu is still sitting at home earning his salary.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's Mr. Vincent Smith is the first person actually from the Zondo Commission recommendations to wear orange overalls physically, but with a plea bargain. So we haven't seen anybody really being charged, prosecuted, found guilty, and sentenced. We haven't seen that one.
We're out of time.
Thank you, Fresh.
Where do we find you on social media? How do we interact with you, sir?
Yeah, let's interact on social media at Botsang M on all social media handles or on WhatsApp 083-884-7787. And if you want to give me business and you are nice, send me an email on botsangm@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And we're done. You can find me on social media at DJ Fresh SA across all social media. We're done with this edition of... Yo, I almost said 938 again. But you can find us on 938 every Monday and Thursday just after 8 for In Context with Botsang. This has been another installment of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politricks. Coming to you live from Discover TV, let them be your stage. They're out in Four Ways, Johannesburg, if you're looking for a space to shoot a podcast, a music video, or even do a DJ set if that's what you want to do. The set is available at Discover TV. Shout out to Keleso Modisa King. She's our executive producer, and Trevor and his team at Pezulu Works for making sure that we look good every single week. Most importantly, you for being here, for liking, subscribing, sharing, forwarding, but most importantly, interacting and being a part of the discussion. Until next week, we are out of here. Have yourselves a great week, in spite of yourselves.